Welcome to The Extra, the show that connects you with the people, issues, and topics that are important to you. I'm your host, Shannon Brenius. And, you know, throughout the past several months, you know, we've been talking a lot about the coronavirus pandemic, about impacts, both expected and unexpected. We've seen a lot of unprecedented impact from the pandemic, certainly on businesses and manufacturing. The pandemic has presented a very distinct challenge. So what are the lessons imperative for businesses to learn out of this experience? What should consumers take note of? I mean, stocking up on toilet paper and canned beans? Who would have thought that would be a thing in 2020? Was it necessary? And were shortages avoidable? Today, our guest, Harvard Business School professor Dr. Willy Shi, will be joining us. He is an expert in manufacturing, improved productivity, and he really has a depth of knowledge when it comes to supply chains. Dr. Shi, thank you so much for joining us here on The Extra on KRDO News Radio.
Well, Shannon, thank you for inviting me.
And we should point out to our listeners, you bet, that Dr. Shi has authored and co-authored more than 125 papers, as well as a book which won the 2009, oh, that was a paper that won the 2009 McKinsey Award, your book, Producing Prosperity, Why America Needs a Manufacturing Renaissance, was co-authored with Gary Pisano, focuses on manufacturing innovation. So obviously we're bringing in an expert to talk about something that has, I think, a lot of Americans, certainly those here in Colorado, stumped, why they're seeing yet again empty store shelves when they go to the store and limits on how much toilet paper they can buy or how many paper towel rolls they can buy. Has that been one of the biggest surprises you've seen come out of the pandemic, Dr. Shi?
Well, Shannon, it has been a surprise, but in many ways it isn't a surprise. I wrote a piece back in February about this toilet paper shortage, and to be honest, I haven't spent a lot of time studying the toilet paper supply chain, but, you know, what I wrote is there are a couple of things that, you know, you don't need to know a lot about the actual supply chain to figure out about toilet paper, okay? And the first thing is demand is pretty stable. It's not like there's some seasons you use more toilet paper or anything, right? So if you're a manufacturer, that means you put in capacity designed for stable demand. Now, I grant you that we have like hotels and schools and a lot of institutions where they suddenly, office buildings, where they suddenly saw toilet paper consumption go down. Okay, but, you know, the residential variety, since demand is stable, what happens is you don't have a lot of slack capacity, if you will. You don't have a lot of that kind of headroom that allows you to suddenly meet a surge in demand. And so it's not only toilet paper, but a lot of other commodities like personal protective equipment, like N95 masks in particular. So when you see a sudden surge in demand, it's really hard for manufacturers to catch up. And we see that across a lot of different categories, not only toilet paper, but, for example, bicycles. We saw that in bicycles. We've seen it in a lot of home appliances. I called up a local appliance dealer that we've done a lot of business with, and I wanted to buy a freezer. This is back in April. I thought, we're growing a lot of things. We needed to buy another freezer. And they basically laughed at me on the phone. They said, have you not been paying attention? It's like, we haven't been able to get freezers since, beginning of March. And that has continued. Again, it's because of this kind of surge in demand, much more than all those production planners around the world ever planned for. And that's why we're seeing these shortages.
And that's coupled with, I think, folks not really understanding how goods get to them. Do you find that in your work? Do you find that that is, you know, a common, blank of knowledge? We just don't know. A lot of us don't care.
Shannon, for sure. You know, I asked my students, it's like, do you know where that your stuff came from? And they said, oh, it came from Amazon, or it came from Costco, or it came from, you know, Safeway or Kroger or whatever. I said, no. I mean, before it got to Amazon or before it came to Kroger, how did it get to you? Okay. And this is probably a shock to a lot of people, but a lot of manufacturers don't even know who's in their supply chains. Okay, so for example, what we have today with a lot of technological complexity, let's look at something like your notebook computer. There's been shortages of notebook computers. Well, the companies who assemble notebook computers, well, we think it's like HP or Dell or Apple or people like that. Well, actually, there's another layer of companies behind them. So if you're thinking about a Dell notebook computer, you know, a lot of them were assembled by a company like Quanta, which is a Taiwanese company whose factories are in China, or maybe Compal or Inventec, or companies that we've never heard of. Now, those companies in turn rely on another layer of suppliers, say for the display screen on that notebook. Okay, and there's a handful of companies in East Asia, in primarily Korea, Taiwan, and China, who make the display screens. And then the display screen guys in turn rely on another layer of suppliers. So what we have is we have this kind of, it's like a layer cake. We have a hierarchy of suppliers where there's, you know, my tier one suppliers are the guys who supply me directly. And below that is a tier two, and below that is a tier three, and tier four, and so on. And the shock to many consumers is that a lot of manufacturers don't know who their suppliers are beyond tier two. Okay. And they say, how can that be? Well, first of all, it's complicated. Let's say, you know, for example, in a notebook computer, you probably have, 2,000-3,000 components, and they probably come from 300 or 400 suppliers. Okay. And then each of those 300 or 400 suppliers probably have another, you know, 100 or, you know, dozens or hundreds of suppliers, and then, and so on down, right? So if you actually want to track every one of them, it becomes very, very hard. Now, what happened at the beginning of this crisis, I mean, the crisis started in China in January, mm-hmm. you know, and then we had the normal Lunar New Year shutdown in China, but a lot of those factories didn't start up again. Okay, so then all of a sudden, after the New Year break, you know, people are saying, well, you know, I'm just waiting for those parts to come in, and they didn't come in, right? So then all of a sudden, I can't assemble this car, or I can't assemble this freezer, or I can't assemble this bicycle. And that's really what happened.
Mm. But we are getting reports that China has rebounded in a different, maybe better way than what we're seeing in other parts of the world and in the U.S. We're going to be continuing our discussion with Dr. Willie Shi, an expert in manufacturing innovation with the Harvard Business School, when The Extra continues. I'm your host, Shannon Brenius. Keep on listening to KRDO News Radio. And welcome to The Extra. I'm your host, Shannon Brenius. And this show, we are focusing on some disturbances in the supply chains that have really caused some real life impacts to folks as they try to navigate through this pandemic period. Will the return of health with a vaccine bring a change to it? I'm not sure people will ever forget seeing grocery store shelves emptied, not just once, but starting to empty out again. And joining us to talk more about this and how this all impacts us and really what the pandemic has done to manufacturers, not just of grocery items or electronic items, or I mean, but really in the manufacturing sector, it has had a huge range of impacts. Dr. Willie Shi is the professor of manufacturing innovation at the Harvard Business School, and he joins me today by phone. Thank you so much again, Dr. Shi, for lending us your expertise. I was just thinking, though, when you were talking about that multitude various layers of suppliers of components that then supply more components that get to, say, you know, a finished notebook computer. I mean, you're talking about different time zones. You're talking about different continents. You're talking about different languages. And certainly when this pandemic shut things down, we saw so many people just staying home. A lot of that business wasn't getting done. Is that how this all kind of started and then snowballed?
Well, Shannon, I think that's how it started. And, you know, that picture that you just described, that we talked about earlier, about, you know, kind of layers of suppliers, was actually a very, very finely tuned network of suppliers feeding, you know, people further up the supply chain, ultimately getting to the assembler, and then the products, you know, being shipped around the world to consumers, right? It's really a very delicately balanced system that has been optimized for efficiency that has, over the last couple of decades, worked very, very well. Okay, now what we did is we threw some rocks in the system with this pandemic, and it affected different parts of the world at different times. So, for example, China really shut down, and they shut down hard, you know, starting around January 21st or so, which was the beginning of their Lunar New Year holiday. But then the factories didn't come online really for as much as a month after that, which is much longer than expected. Now, there was a delay before we felt that in other parts of the world. First, because the pandemic didn't hit the U.S. until really didn't hit us hard until starting about a month and a half later, almost 2 months later.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, and just as, you know, our demand kind of collapsed, the supplies from everywhere else were starting to flood in. Okay, so then we ended up with the system, and this has been a remarkable year in that regard. We ended up with these imbalances in the system. In other words, all those parts and finished goods coming from China just at a time when we shut our stores, we shut our distribution centers. You know, so all of a sudden, all these shipments were coming in. There was nowhere to put them, right? And then, so then, they would sit in containers in the parking lots of the distribution centers. And then there were no empty containers to go back to China. You know, and so we saw these huge imbalances around the world. The container shipping lines, for example, cut out a lot of their sailings because there was no demand. And then we also saw global passenger traffic on the airlines just slashed by 95%. Basically, all international travel was shut down. And what people forget is that carries about half the world's air freight, a little over half the world's air freight. So we had this huge disruption in air cargo, in ocean cargo, and we're still recovering from that now. We haven't recovered yet.
Right. And I you know, I hadn't even thought about the traffic in ocean cargo, because for a while there was, you know, there were various travel restrictions placed on ports on letting ships dock. Did that affect, I guess, that supply transportation method?
Well, yeah, and that's one of the things that people have taken for granted, which is I can put it on a ship in China, and then it gets to my Walmart or my Target or my Home Depot in a very predictable fashion. I mean, so the big importers like those chains, you know, Walmart, Lowe's, Home Depot, Target, they rely on ocean shipping. Okay, now ocean shipping plunged for a while, okay, but then as China opened up, and they got the pandemic under control, then we have retailers rushing to restock, right? Because we had a summer and an early fall, which was pretty open. And so retailers were, A, they were restocking, and B, they were shifting their mindset from, you know, it used to be, I don't want inventory until just in time, right? Because I don't want to have the cost associated with that. So I would say they changed from this just-in-time mentality to just-in-case. It's like, I better have more of this stuff in stock so I don't get caught short again. So since about August, and it's continuing till now, and it's getting worse every day, you know, on the trans-Pacific trade lanes from Asia to the United States, we have congestion, we have ships being backed up at Los Angeles, Long Beach, we have you know, on the receiving side of these ports, we have shortages of truck chassis to pick up containers, right? And it's actually hitting a lot of people in the middle of the country pretty hard because there's such a shortage of containers in China to ship stuff over here that the shipping lines have even said, I'm going to haul empties back to China rather than bring those ag exports from the Midwest to China, because I just need the containers. I can't wait for the exports to fill them. So it causes huge dislocation in so many sectors around the world this year.
Wow. It's like if you put your stylus on any point in this, it seems like it's causing different permutations of what the normal processes would be. Fascinating, Dr. Shi. And I want to get to this question because we just heard reports this week that Chinese manufacturing activity has hit a 10-year high in November, and that they are in their ninth straight month for manufacturing activity expansion. How does that compare to the U.S.? We're going to continue the discussion here with Dr. Willie Shi from Harvard Business School just after this break for messages and news, traffic, and weather. Welcome back to The Extra. After the break, we've been talking with Dr. Willie Shi of the Harvard Business School, who is also a writer of numerous papers and the author of a book. And we're going to be telling folks about that book in a little while, because I think it does have some bearing on, where the U.S. stands as we make our way through the pandemic. But Dr. Shi, before the break, we were talking about, or I was talking about, bringing up these latest reports on China's expanded manufacturing presence on the global stage. What do you read into that?
Well, Shannon, at the height of the pandemic, well, certainly this summer, I and a lot of other people were thinking, between the trade war and the pandemic, many companies were saying, I have to diversify my sourcing, because the lessons learned in the early part of this year were, man, I am over-dependent on China. I need to execute what, some people call a China plus one or China plus two strategy. A lot of companies had moved manufacturing to places like Vietnam or Malaysia, or moved some of their manufacturing at least. Just to kind of diversify away. But I think what we have seen, especially since about August, and this has been a surprise to a lot of people, is China got their arms around this pandemic, and they got manufacturing going in a way that many, many other countries, including the U.S., I'm sorry to say, have not been able to. And as a consequence, there has been kind of a rush. Some people would say, some of those manufacturers who earlier said, I'm going to move away from China to maybe Indonesia or Malaysia or some of these other places, or even Mexico, it's like, wait a minute. And I've had some reports from one of the big ports in southern China that I talked to a couple weeks ago, saying a lot of those guys who moved some of their manufacturing out of China are actually coming back because it's reliable. They've shown that they can do it. Okay, so that's been a surprise. Now, what we have seen, as I was mentioning before the break, what we've seen on the Trans-Pacific trade lanes, the primary trade lanes. So, most of those imports for Colorado come through Los Angeles, Long Beach. Okay, some of them will come through Seattle, but really Los Angeles, Long Beach is the preferred destination. And so the trade on that trade lane from August continuing through this day has been just much higher than normal. And in fact, what we've seen is the shipping lines now starting to put on new express services. So if anything, this whole crisis has made China kind of a stronger power in manufacturing rather than diminish it, as many people would have thought earlier on.
And is that, I would guess that is a renewed source of concern for American manufacturers who already may be feeling the pinch because of the pandemic.
I think so. I mean, I think this is one of the big questions, right? Because, first of all, I need to have more resilience in my supply chain. I need to diversify. But then the source that has proven that they can deliver has been China, right? So that's really a dilemma for a lot of manufacturers.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you knew this, but Colorado Springs has a pretty sizable manufacturing presence, especially when it comes to like avionics and medical devices. So when it comes to local manufacturers, do you think that they are able to rise to the level that the pandemic, the opportunities that the pandemic is creating, like China has, or are they stymied in that by what's going on in our country health-wise?
Well, I actually think, and you do have a good, you do have some good manufacturers in the area. I know of many of them. Okay, I actually think it's a time of opportunity because this is the time where people are talking about resilience. I've been talking to a number of people in Washington and in a number of other areas about, you know, what can we do to help American manufacturing during this time. All right, so it is a time of opportunity where, people can get assistance. I think there will be aid packages and incentives to help move some of that production closer to home. There's a lot of focus on resilience, especially in medical technologies. And how much do I need to depend on other sources? How much slack capacity do I need to have in this country? So there is a lot of focus on it. The key question is, how am I going to address the higher costs of doing it in the U.S.? Okay, and I've been telling people that there are ways of doing this by adopting newer process technologies, but it's a complicated question. But I do think there is opportunity now.
Right. And Dr. Shi wrote a book co-authored with Gary Pisano called Producing Prosperity, Why America Needs a Manufacturing Renaissance. I'm guessing this was written pre-pandemic, so you may need to write an addendum to this book, I'm guessing, Dr. Shi. We'll make sure that we put on our podcast page a link to how folks who are interested can go ahead and buy the book. But when you talk about this, it talks to just a myriad of issues. On the one hand, you do see increased demand for certain things. Like you were saying, you wanted to buy a freezer and you were joining a lot of other people who are buying freezers. I wanted to buy a bike. I actually traded away my old bike before I realized there was a bike shortage. So now no bike for me. If I had known that, I would have somehow fixed the old bike. I wouldn't have traded it away. So we are seeing just, shortages in certain areas, but then also gluts in other areas. What's an area that you can see will be having a glut that could be impactful on the whole industry?
It's funny. I haven't focused on gluts so much, okay? But one of the things that I have seen, okay, and this is where I think a lot of consumer product manufacturers are really trying to rethink this, okay? I had a call with one of the major grocery chains, and they wanted advice on toilet paper, okay? And so I just asked them a couple simple questions. They were having trouble keeping it on the shelves. Mm-hmm. And I asked them, well, how many different varieties do you have? I mean, in retail, we call those stock keeping units or SKUs. All right, so one SKU may be, well, we have the 4-roll pack, or we have the 16-roll pack or whatever, right? Or we have single ply, double ply, all these different flavors, if you will. And I asked them, well, how many different varieties do you have that you're trying to keep in stock? Okay, and they had 60. All right, so then my next question was, well, how many different varieties do consumers actually need? Because if you have 60 different varieties, then that means somebody in the store has to forecast all those needs, and then the manufacturers have to figure out how many of each flavor to make, okay? And that's a lot harder problem than if you only had maybe 16 varieties or 10 varieties, okay? And so I think we're already starting to see that, especially in some of the consumer packaged goods, where people say, to make it through to the other side of this thing, what we're going to do is we're going to focus our manufacturing capacity on less variety just to make sure the consumers can get something. Now, that's the bigger question, right, which is how many varieties do we really need, right? So, I mean, that'll be an interesting change.
Right, right. And some people may not be accepting of those. You know, some people are very wedded to their distinct varieties and, you know, distinct offerings. And goodness forbid if you try to offer them a substitute. We're going to continue to talk with Dr. Willie Shi. We do need to take a short break again for messages. We'll be back with the final episode, or the final segment, I should say, of this extra episode. And welcome back to The Extra, the show that connects you with the people, issues, and topics that are important to you. And today we're looking into a topic that I'm sure a lot of people hadn't really thought of before the pandemic. We took it for granted that certain things would be available, like bicycles at the bike store. Nope. Think again. You got to wait for that supply chain to get all smoothed out. And then also Dr. Willie Shi, who's joining us from the Harvard Business School, just before the break, I was reminded for a while there, several months actually, I was shopping for my in-laws. They are very wedded to specific brands, specific, you know, kind of varieties. Like, for instance, a certain ice cream. Only a certain brand, only a certain type. I think I went to 3 stores to get the right kind of ice cream for a while. Can you tell us, are consumers going to be paying more as we continue with this, at least through the winter?
Well, Shannon, I think we'll see some price increases, okay? But I think the country is in an economic state that nobody has a lot of patience for paying more for these things, okay? And I think a lot of companies are thinking about how am I going to deliver through here and not really raise prices a lot, okay? I think we're starting to see some early signs of some inflation pressure, okay? But, you know, it's really a dilemma. Nobody's excited about paying more. We have a lot of people who can't pay more, right, because of their employment situation caused by this pandemic. So it's really a dilemma. But, you know, if we want to diversify sourcing, which a lot of manufacturers have said they want to do, that is going to cost more. So it's a tough problem.
Right. And at the top of this show, we talked about PPE and how that was affected by supply chain as well as much, much more increased demand. Has that smoothed out at all?
Well, it's still I was talking to somebody this morning in Washington about that and just, you know, managing the whole PPE supply chain. I had a couple of questions in one session this past summer saying, Willie, how come this country can't make more N95 masks? Well, part of the problem is demand went up more than a factor of 20, right? And if you think about it, you know, if you want to have the surge capacity to expand your production by 20x, that means in most times you're running your factory at 5% of capacity, okay? And nobody on Wall Street is going to let any company run it 5% capacity. They're going to say you're wasting the owner's capital dollars here. Right now we have seen dramatic expansions in capacity, but our consumption is through the roof on these things. It is certainly better, right? There are more manufacturers who've come into the fray, but we're still importing a lot of it from China.
And yet we just reported today in Colorado, at least, new car registrations are down 15% year over year. So, you know, there are some areas that are seeing reduced demand. And what does that do to, you know, pricing to other parts of the supply chain?
Yeah, you know, and there's broad impacts, like in the motor vehicle segment more broadly. One of the things that I think a lot of the Detroit automakers have figured out, not necessarily because they planned it that way, but their inventories have been tight because they've had trouble manufacturing the models people want, you know, for shortage of parts or inability to get a lot of people into the factories because of the pandemic. Okay, but so dealer inventories have been relatively low, and ironically, pricing therefore has been higher, right? So the automakers have done okay, but here the consumers are bearing the brunt. You know, those who can afford it can buy, but then those who can afford it are paying more.
Hmm. In our final minute or so that we have here, at the top of the show, we talked about what are the lessons that you think are imperative for businesses to learn and for consumers to basically take to heart. What would you say those lessons are?
Well, I think the key thing is resiliency in your supply chains has a cost. And we've taken a lot of those things for granted, like the reliable logistics, dependable supply. Okay. And that has turned out not to be the case. Now, this has been, a massive disruption globally, right, which has made it very difficult. Okay. But, I don't know that we can take those things for granted. And that means there's going to be a cost associated with better resilience, maybe closer to home manufacturing. The question now we have to face is, are we willing to pay that?
Mm. Interesting questions there. Some points to ponder. And we definitely have been weathering a storm, the likes of which we've never seen, and certainly the all of the fallout has yet to be seen. I appreciate your time, Dr. Willie Shih, Harvard Business School professor and writer. He is the author of Producing Prosperity, Why America Needs a Manufacturing Renaissance. We'll make sure we get the information for how to go and purchase a copy on our podcast link. But in the meantime, Dr. Shih, just my very deep thanks for joining us and shedding some light on all of these subjects.
And thank you for having me.
You've been listening to The Extra on KRDO News Radio.